Nope. Seen it. Oh, nah.
Can't find something to watch? Introducing Sky Stream. It's Sky without the dish. Watch unmissable Sky exclusives like The Regime and Netflix too, all over super reliable Sky full fibre broadband. Get Sky Stream, Sky Broadband and Netflix for just €50 a month. Search Sky Stream. Availability subject location. New customers only. 12-month minimum term. Stream and broadband sold separately. Further terms apply. For more info, see sky.ie/speeds.
This week on Crime World.
There was a Republican police from 1920. I mean, the IRA was effectively trying to run an underground government. And actually, there was a crime wave. 1919, 1920. There's a wave of bank robberies, post office robberies, robberies of individuals, robberies of pubs in Dublin and in rural areas as well. So the IRA tried to actually clamp down on that. They, on occasion, solving bank robberies and giving the money back to the banks. Now,
I'm Nicola Tallant, and you can listen to my podcast, Crime World, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the best of the Indo Daily, your chance to catch up on some of the most popular episodes of 2022.
Today on the Indo Daily, from Ibiza parties to South American prisons, the story of the Peru 2.
The two women accused of smuggling drugs into Peru appeared in court again late last night. Michaela McCullum from Dungannon and Melissa Reid from Scotland have now pleaded guilty to drug smuggling but claim they were coerced into carrying the drugs.
Michaela McCullum from County Tyrone made news around the world 9 years ago when she and Scottish woman Melissa Reid were arrested in Lima Airport.
The 20-year-olds were arrested at Lima Airport 2 weeks ago after £1.5 million worth of cocaine was found in their luggage.
Peruvian authorities say the drugs were hidden in 34 packages of oatmeal and dehydrated food products. 20-year-old Michaela McCullum from Ireland and 19-year-old Melissa Reid from Scotland were about to board a flight to Madrid, Spain.
Dubbed the Peru 2, the pair had £1.6 million worth of cocaine hidden in their luggage. The story that unfolded became headlines around the world and would eventually form the basis of a new documentary that has dominated the streaming charts.
When we were being taken to a holding cell, we were all squeezed into this car. You know, me and Melissa were actually sitting on the police guard's knees because there wasn't room for us all. We were so hungry and I was begging and begging for some food because we drove past a few chicken shops. Chicken shops are massive in Peru and they didn't speak any English, but, you know, we were like doing chicken, like bark bark, because that's the only way we could communicate.
You were doing the wings with
yes.
your arms?
The lady who was in the passenger seat had said, you know, we'll get you food if you'll sing a song for me. So, yeah, I sang a song, Bruno Mars, Lazy Song. I can't even listen to him since.
I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today on the Indo Daily, I'm joined by Sarah Cadden, journalist with the Sunday Independent, to delve into the world of Michaela McCullum, from dancer to drug smuggler to published author and tabloid darling. So the names Michaela McCullum and Melissa Reid became household personalities almost. But what did we know about them before they became the Peru 2?
Well, Michaela McCullum, we know an awful lot more about than Melissa Reid. Obviously, here in Ireland, because she's from Dungannon and County Tyrone, you know, we'd had a bit more invested in her in this whole saga. But Michaela McCullum was a photography student in Belfast. And in the summer of 2013, she headed off to Ibiza to work for the summer.
Well, I kind of thought Ibiza was a, you know, warm and beautiful place. I'd heard, you know, quite a lot of good things about Ibiza. And, you know, it was quite free and everybody got along and it was a really good place. And I got a job on my second day there. I ended up having three jobs in the end. My idea was to make as much money as I can so, you know, I can set up a life for me.
And she has said herself, you know, she was going there for a good time. It wasn't, you know, for the hard work. And so she did the kind of jobs that you'll remember Ibiza uncovered, Fionnán, the, you know, hostessing, the, you know,
dancing.
Leafleting, mm-hmm. There was dancing. And there seems to have been a lot of partying. And Melissa Reid, who's from Scotland, was also in Ibiza that summer on a similar kind of trajectory as Michaela. And she was in, Michaela McCullum was in touch with her family. They have said like every couple of days, she kept in touch fairly regularly. They're a big family and how we would have first even heard her name was there was a missing persons appeal in August 2013. Her parents hadn't heard from her in 12 days. It was quite out of character. Her sister said there was no, they couldn't get through to her phone and she wasn't active on Facebook. And they were very, very worried. The Department of Foreign Affairs was involved.
Yeah, so this was a genuine case of an Irish national being gone missing, basically.
Gone missing. And, you know, she was in Ibiza. Everybody knew that Ibiza was, you know, what might have happened to her at a party, or might she have got lost, or, you know, anything could have happened. And the first the family knew was she phoned her mother, and her mother was desperately upset and said, "I thought you were dead." And Michaela said, "I'm in Peru, I'm in jail." And her mother then fainted and the line went dead.
The 20-year-olds were arrested at Lima Airport 2 weeks ago after £1.5 million worth of cocaine was found in their luggage.
What the public would have known first was, I mean, anyone who was around at the time remembers the pictures of the two girls sitting side by side in Lima Airport. Michaela with what she calls in this new, this documentary series that's just landed on Netflix, the most famous updo in the world. Sort of a Mickey Mouse bun, Mickey Mouse ears bun affair on the top of her head, looking kind of chastened in the airport.
With their luggage around them.
This was luggage.
The perp shot, basically.
Really, you know, young girls' luggage, you know, bright purple suitcase. And
luggage displaying these packets that were packed with drugs.
Yeah, 11 kilograms of cocaine worth £1.5 million packed into porridge bags, which would be an unusual thing for two girls to take home from a holiday in Peru. And apparently hand on the shoulder and come over here. And apparently the airport went wild, you know, security screaming, coca, coca, coca. And that was it. They knew they were done for.
What do we know about how they ended up in Peru in the first place?
Well, Michaela McCollum has written a book since her release from prison in Peru. And in it, she explains that she was having a good time in Ibiza. She was partying hard. There were drugs, there was drink. And at a party one night where she says she had taken acid, she met a guy called Davey who convinced her that it would be a good idea to carry a parcel for him. Now, she thought she was taking a parcel from Barcelona back to Ibiza, but that wasn't the case.
But she knew what the parcel was.
She has said, "I knew it was drugs. I just didn't know, you know, how significant an amount." And she also didn't know it was coming from Peru. She thought that Lima was part of Spain.
I was very naive. I was so young. Very insecure. A lot of times I didn't know how to say no to somebody. I kind of just followed along with it.
Yeah, so she knew that she had been recruited as a drug mule.
Yes, but like any time you see Michaela McCollum talk about this, it's really obvious that's not how she frames it in her own head. She, you know, very much looks back and thinks, "I was young and I was stupid and I let myself get drawn into this and I had no idea how huge it was or how awful it was."
Mm.
It was a lot of cocaine.
Even for somebody who was stupid and young and naive. So the two of them, they don't actually know each other though, ahead of all this. They're not friends in Ibiza.
They're not friends, but they seem to have been part of the same kind of scene. And just, you know, I suppose when it's easy there even to be critical of how blithely you could say she went into it. But I suppose if you contextualize that she was living in Ibiza for a summer, where she would drug taking all around her, regardless of how she was behaving herself, these things become normalised. And of course, you must be bumping into people who are dealing on grand scales, small scales all the time. And I suppose you could say the lines become quite blurred.
So the two of them jet off to Lima, and they don't just arrive and come back. There's a backstory here.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they
there's
have
a cover
to
story,
play it? Out the drama. Now, she didn't know until she got on the plane that she was heading to South America, because she saw, you know, the little map with the arrow pointing to South America and thought, oops, Lima's not in Spain. So they had spent some time in an apartment in Mallorca to kind of set themselves up and kind of, you know, for the trip. And so the two girls would have got to know each other a bit then. Then they're on the plane. Then they spend a week in Peru, around Lima, seeing the sights, you know, turning it into what can easily be portrayed as a holiday.
So they're backpackers, effectively, over from Europe.
Exactly. And then the bags are packed for them, apparently, and they head out to the airport.
Yeah, so drug cartel meets up with them, packs these porridge bags into their bags, and not the Peruvian authorities are not that dumb to fall for this one.
This man tapped me on my shoulder and pointed to a room, you know, next door and asked me to come. So that's kind of when I thought, oh my goodness, like... So when I went into the room, they already had Melissa's case opened, and they instantly seen all of the bags, and they knew, you know, you're not coming to Peru to take home 20 packets of porridge, like this is not, you know. And they, you know, opened it and tested it for, you know, cocaine, and it came back positive, and the whole room just erupted because they were so happy that, you know, they had caught, you know, such a big smuggling that morning. So instantly the room went from 5 people to, you know, like 30 people, and everybody was shouting. And
yeah, and, you know, this isn't, I mean, it's not that it's commonplace, but this is what they're on the lookout for in Lima. And two girls, who knows how nervous they were, who knows how kind of, you know, uneasy they seemed about everything, but certainly they drew attention to themselves in some way.
Yeah, such that the authorities... happened upon them as such. Where do we go then from the point where we now have the Peru 2 are now internationally known as much for their appearance as what they've been caught for, and how does it progress from there then?
The girls were working in bars in Ibiza when they said they were forced to become drug mules by an armed gang. Their lawyer said they are pleading not guilty to the charges.
But, I mean, that's exactly the whole point about this case, is that at all times the girls were under threat. They felt under threat, even when they were on their own.
Well, they originally told the police that they had been held at gunpoint and threatened. Their lives had been threatened. Their families' lives had been threatened if they didn't carry these drugs. Fairly quickly that falls apart. And the maximum sentence they're facing when they go to trial is 15 years. But they do a deal whereby they give information about the cartel to the authorities, and that's reduced to 6 years and 8 months, which, you know, in her case, she just turned 20. It's a long time. But they were originally in a kind of temporary prison, and they moved to Arcon 2, which is a maximum security prison in Lima, and notoriously violent. You know, a lot of kind of sexual crime within the prison, and like pretty disgusting conditions, overflowing toilets, insects everywhere in the night, obviously unbearable heat.
I mean, we were sharing a room with up to 100 other prisoners in one cell. After a couple of months, you forget, you know, you kind of realise that you don't have any privacy. I mean, having a shower, you're having an open shower with everybody else watching you, and going to the toilet, it's the same. So I think after a few months, you kind of weirdly think that's okay.
She did write a lot in her book about how she feared for her life for the first few months, that the cartel would come for her because she had given information about them.
How does she get on as such, or how does she get through this period in prison?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's always the Michaela story, because we know pretty much nothing about Melissa Reed in prison. But Michaela you know, had what you might call a rags to riches kind of story in prison, where she started working in the beauty salon in the prison. She seems to have been earning quite a bit of money when she was doing that, enough to pay someone to clean her cell, clean her toilet, which apparently was a pretty disgusting job. The toilets there were were terrible. I've even read that she became was voted general coordinator in the prison, which meant she had control of the TV, phone and shopping budgets. So she became quite like an influential person within the prison, which is pretty remarkable for an extremely young foreigner who initially did not speak the language.
Yeah, so arrives in a strange country, and yet she basically adapts to prison life.
Yeah, and it sort of seems to embrace her. And, you know, she can tend to kind of portray this as, you know, I was sort of redeemed. It all turned out okay, but it was still awful. Still feel sorry for me. So, you know, there have been a lot of pictures around of that she would have sent to her family when she was in prison of, you know, birthday celebrations or this and that. And she's like, oh, you know, I had to tell them that I was okay. I wanted them to know I was okay. But really, it was dreadful. So there's always this pull in two directions with her when she tells her story of kind of a, am I great angle, and then also, oh, poor me.
Yeah, there's a bit of, I mean, let's face it, no prison in South America is going to be a pleasant environment to stay. There's also stories about you can pay extra for better quality food. There's a story about chicken trying to get some food and it being in a police van.
When we were being taken to a holding cell, we were all squeezed into this car. You know, me and Melissa were actually sitting on the police guard's knees because there wasn't room for us all. We were so hungry and I was begging and begging for some food because we drove past a few chicken shops. Chicken shops are massive in Peru, and they didn't speak any English, but you know, we were like doing chicken like bark bark because that's the only way we could communicate.
You were doing the wings with
your arms? Yes. The lady who was in the passenger seat had said, you know, we'll get you food if you'll sing a song for me. So yeah, I sang a song, Bruno Mars, Lazy Song. I can't even listen to him since.
Yeah, I think that was early on when they were kind of going to trial, and she was asked, they were starving and they saw, you know, chicken fast food outlets on the way there, couldn't speak the language, mimed a chicken. And the prison guard, whose knee she was sitting on because the van was so small, said he'd get her chicken if she sang him a song. So she apparently sang him a Bruno Mars number and they got their chicken. So, you know, it's like, oh, it was awful. The conditions were terrible. But look, I was great. I got up and did my Bruno Mars and we all got fed. And so she's a funny mix of things and how she's always told her story. And the thing about her is she has pretty steadily kept herself in the public eye since her release from prison in 2016 or 2015, but back to Ireland in 2016.
And why were they released early?
So there was some new legislation came in Peru about early release. So she managed to get released from prison, but she had to stay in Peru for a time and then apply to leave and come back to Ireland, where it's thought that she kind of served out her probation and whatever over here. And like, even that wasn't without controversy, not just because she'd been released early, but that she seemed to have been sharing an apartment with a cocaine smuggler she'd befriended in prison. And there were lots of photos of them out in nightclubs in Lima and having a fine old time. And, you know, she defended this, you know, saying it doesn't cost much to go out at night in Lima and we're not actually having a high old time. But we deserve some, you know, bit of fun after all we've suffered, kind of thing.
So the two of them kind of start out as a classic scare story by the authorities of this is what is going to happen. If Europeans come over here and think they can ship cocaine back home with them, you will be caught, you will be sentenced to long periods in prison. And then ultimately the story kind of, that narrative does kind of change. The penalty isn't as severe ultimately as is set out at the start.
Yeah, and you know, she has said when she had her book out, you know, she has said she hasn't profited from this. She, you know, she did one interview with RTE, she didn't get paid for that. She got plenty of offers of paid appearances and TV shows and, you know, interviews that she didn't do because she didn't said she didn't want to make money out of it, and she wants to raise awareness for younger people that you shouldn't do this kind of thing. But she has lived what would appear to be a quite glamorous life since then. And, you know, she's not shy in kind of looking for the kind of attention that is confidence boosting and ego boosting and makes, you know, gives you a profile. And, you know, her Instagram is very much full of, she has two small sons now and, you know, nice holidays and glamorous shots. And even, you know, when this Netflix, when this BBC documentary series landed on Netflix at the end of last month, she featured on her Instagram with a cake with Netflix kind of candle sticking out of it. And the caption was, effing celebration cake. And you're kind of thinking, how is it a celebration? You can't deny that she sort of seeks a degree of fame. She doesn't want notoriety. She wants to be celebrated.
Yeah, she's almost a kind of an influencer. She appears like a, you know, a former contestant on Love Island almost at this point in that kind of space. Do we know where any income has come from over the past number of years?
When she had her book in 2016, You'll Never See Daylight Again, you can watch still an appearance she made on Good Morning Britain where Piers Morgan kind of gave her hell.
Okay, look, you were thinking, weren't you? I mean, you were thinking, I'm going to make $5,000 taking a load of illegal drugs out of the country. You knew that. And you knew it was against the law.
Yeah.
You knew if you got caught, there'd be heavy penalties. I mean, this idea you weren't thinking. You were 20 years old. You're not a
I wasn't thinking correctly. I should have actually thought.
Well, you were thinking very correctly about lining your pocket with $5,000 to take 1.4, well, we didn't know how much cocaine, but a lot of cocaine out of a country. I mean, even the most imbecilic person on earth knows if you take a load of cocaine out of a country like Peru, it's a very bad thing to be doing. It's illegal, and if you get caught, the penalty would be very high. I don't understand this I wasn't thinking bit. I mean, you were thinking. You very carefully planned what you were going to do.
You were blinded by the
$5,000. I mean, but I wasn't thinking clearly. I mean, £5,000 wasn't enough money for what I was being asked to do.
And she said then that really she expected to get £1,000 or £2,000 out of the sales of the book. Now, I've read elsewhere that she was offered up to £300,000 to write that book. It's hard to see what her income is beyond that she could be defined as an influencer at this stage. But again, it's that kind of, are you raising awareness? What are you raising awareness of other than Michaela McCollum?
And at the same time, Melissa Reid never really heard from again.
No, and apparently works in a homeless shelter in Scotland. She was released later than Michaela McCollum, and she works in a homeless shelter, apparently specifically with people who are addicts. And we don't know anything about her, but I suppose when you hear that, you think that it's someone who may feel they want to give something back or make amends for what they did. She apparently was offered £4,000 to Michaela's five.
What next for Michaela McCollum? Do you see reality TV appearances on chat shows? Where do you see her going next?
I'd say there's a big difference between where other people see Michaela McCollum going and where she sees herself going. The more you kind of look at her, I think she has a definite sort of orange is the new black thing going on in her head. There is that kind of thing of pretty blonde girl as she is now in this awful prison. I feel she's thinking there has to be a movie in this, and probably lots of people have said to her, you have an amazing story, it's going to make an amazing film. And I think from what we've seen of her so far, that is probably something she sees for herself, her name in even bigger lights.
And my thanks to Sarah Cadden for joining me today. I'm Fionnán Sheehan, and today's episode of the Indo Daily was produced by Gareth Mulhall, researched by Tabitha Monaghan,
recorded by Gavin Hennessy, with sound design by John Smith. Archive clips from Netflix, CNN, RTE, Newstalk, On Demand News, ITV, Sky News, The Guardian, and Independent.ie. To hear more of our award-winning journalism, visit independent.ie or wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoy the Indo Daily, don't forget to like, follow, and leave us a review.